Well, taking a look at the week on the markets, I'm joined by Mark Riggle from Milford Asset Management. Well, Mark, let's start with the big news of the week, Xero's delisting from the NZX. What did you make of the decision, and did it come as something of surprise?
Well, yes, it was something of a surprise to us. We had no warning at all of this decision. And we do disagree with some of the arguments that have been put forward by Rod Dury and Xero. You know, being listed in New Zealand has not been an impediment to attracting global investors, as indicated by the significant foreign ownership of the company right now. You know, they've already got a dual listing in Australia. And despite that, over the past year, over $1 billion of Xero stock has been traded in New Zealand. And New Zealand represents trading of 72% of the total trading across New Zealand and Australia. That's to say, investors would rather transact in New Zealand at the moment. So, yeah, it's something of a mystery to us. It seems to be driven somewhat by a desire to be included in Australian indices, such as the ASX 200. And possibly this is indicative of a global trend of increasing money invested in passive investment products, i.e. funds that own companies because they are in indices rather than because they like the company. Actually, in the short term, we think this move will result in fewer passive investors following the stock. And this was reflected in the fall in the share price of Xero. I think long term, being in New Zealand is definitely no barrier to being included in large global indices. So we think this decision is somewhat far from being clear cut.
And obviously a big blow for the NZX itself at a time when obviously there are a few new listings and not a lot of M&A activity. Where to now for the exchange and obviously for CEO Mark Peterson?
Well, that's right. It's hugely disappointing, both for the New Zealand Exchange and also for the New Zealand financial markets industry in general. We're going to lose one of our flagship companies that could one day, of course, be one of the biggest listed New Zealand companies. It will deplete further our pool of listed companies. As you said, this is a time when we're seeing very few new issues coming to market. And finally, it will result in a significant loss of revenue to the New Zealand broking industry. We do need the exchange to show leadership here, to step up, encourage the listing of new issues by reducing cost and complexity of doing so. I think they need to promote further liquidity on the exchange itself and thereby allow investors to more easily transact in those listed companies.
What about the implications for the index itself? We know that Xero and A2 have been two of the big success stories of this year. Obviously, that the market is going to look pretty thin if Xero exits, won't it?
Well, that's right. It's over 3% weight in the New Zealand 50 index at the moment, so its removal will be a significant loss. The breadth of performance of shares in New Zealand has been quite small this year. So A2 and Xero and, to a certain extent, Fisher & Paykel Healthcare have been the largest drivers of performance of the New Zealand share market this year. So removing one of those legs does, yeah, of course, remove the potential for performance going forward.
Do you think it's time for another capital markets task force, or have those issues already been well and truly canvassed, perhaps?
Well, I think they need to be revisited. Of course, you know, this decision, I think, you know, shows that there's a need for changes to be made. Whether that comes about via a task force, I'm not sure. But yes, I think changes need to be made to, you know, to stop further things like this happening.
Now, in general, the market has been buoyant in recent weeks since the election, but the new government has created some uncertainty and some analysts see signs of economic growth slowing. What's your take?
I'd be wary of drawing too many conclusions about economic growth as a direct result of the change in government. However, you know, as you mentioned, notwithstanding those changes, it's clear to us that there are signs the New Zealand economy is slowing a little. Migration is arguably the biggest driver of domestic economic growth, and that slowed from its peak pace a few months ago, and it's likely to continue to fall, even without taking the proposed changes in policy from the new government into consideration. The other leg of growth, of course, is housing, represents a significant portion of the economy. And we know that prices of houses have fallen in the past year in Auckland, and we think that prices will continue to moderate going forward. The key to that is just how much the New Zealand consumer has been emboldened by rising house prices and whether we'll see a reduction in consumer spending as a result of further falls. Examining the rest of the economy, the other major drivers are construction and tourism, which have both sectors have been going very, very well recently. But both of these industries face headwinds from capacity constraints, and that means they're unlikely to grow going forward as fast as they have in the past. All in all, it points to a slowing in GDP growth from the run of exceptional growth we've had in recent years in New Zealand.
Now, Milford's KiwiSaver funds have reduced their New Zealand exposure. Does that suggest that you have some concerns about long-term economic growth?
Yes, that's right, and that does certainly play a very significant part in our decisions to reduce our New Zealand exposure. But there are many factors to consider. So, you know, as well as the economic outlook, there is the fact that New Zealand shares do have somewhat expensive valuations at the moment, and there is the potential for rising global interest rates to reduce the attractiveness of our local shares' high dividend rates. So from our perspective, we think there is better value to be had in Australian or global shares at the moment, given the better growth outlook in those regions. And so we have been moving our portfolios that way most recently. It's worth being clear, though, regarding New Zealand shares, that we're not completely exiting or forecasting a crash in the New Zealand share market. We remain and will always be predisposed to investing heavily in our local market. You know, given the evolving policy changes at a government level, we think going forward there'll be increased opportunities for us, for both winners and losers within the stock market. And as active managers, this will be a good environment for us to position ourselves in companies that can benefit from the prevailing economic backdrop.
So what are you particularly seeing in Australia that has led to this decision?
Well, it's not so much that Australia is looking fantastic at the moment. Far from it. We think there are significant issues in the Australian economy, and, you know, not least the fact that their politics is, you know, is in such a state of disarray at the moment. But the economy itself has been doing a bit better recently, and that's been driven by higher growth in China, increased business confidence and stronger job creation, which has alleviated some of the pressures on the household finances that we identified. Going forward, we're reasonably neutral on the Australian economic outlook. The housing sector and private construction activity is slowing, but there is a large pipeline of infrastructure spending to come. So the economic outlook is mixed. What I've got to say about Australia, though, is that the broad Australian share market is very, very large. There's over 2,500 listed companies to choose from. And so with a team of six on the ground there in Australia, we're confident of staying fully invested because we continue to find companies with good growth prospects and attractive valuation levels.